The following program is underwritten in part by Organic Valley Family of Farms, celebrating 20 years organic and farmer-owned since 1988. Meet your local farmers at organicvalley.coop.
Welcome to The Bioneers, revolution from the heart of nature.
I want to put forth the proposition that some of the most important politics going on in this country today are being transacted at farmers' markets. I think local food is one of the most important political movements going on.
It's all alive. It's all connected. It's all intelligent. It's all relatives.
We stand at the threshold of a historic opportunity in the human experiment to reimagine how to live on Earth and with each other in a way that honors the web of life. It's a revolution from the heart of nature and the human heart. As the basic life support systems of planet Earth plunge into dangerous decline, in this series, Bioneers: Revolution from the Heart of Nature, we celebrate social and scientific innovators with breakthrough solutions guided by how nature does it. The Bioneers, combining social innovation, leading-edge science, and indigenous and traditional knowledge, creating a future environment of hope. As a nation, the United States is in deep fat. It's hard to escape the news anymore that almost two-thirds of Americans are overweight or obese. Our fat-laden, supersized fast food diet is taking its toll. The rate of childhood obesity has doubled in the last 10 years, often in association with diabetes. For the first time in modern history, public health projections suggest that the lifespan of the current generation may be less than that of its parents. As above, so below. But Fat City is no metaphor these days. There's a sewer fat crisis clogging our underground urban arteries, three-quarters of which are so clotted with restaurant grease that they're functioning at half capacity. As a result, every year, well over 40,000 illegal sewage spills are polluting our waterways, bays, and oceans, costing over $25 billion a year. Of course, that only adds to the more familiar agricultural byproducts, manure lagoons, pesticide poisoning, and the infamous Mississippi River fertilizer runoff, which leaves a 5,800-square-mile dead zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Clearly, what we put on our collective plate and how we grow our food are going to be among the most decisive factors impacting the fate of the earth and public health. Agriculture is not only the world's biggest business, it's also the single greatest destroyer of the environment. But today, a worldwide food and farming movement has emerged, and it's rewriting the menu from farm to plate. Few journalists have done more than Michael Pollan to serve up food for thought about diet and food systems. As a journalist and author, he's courageously ventured into some of the gnarliest briar patches of American food culture. Join us for the next half hour as we go beyond the barcode and explore the local food revolution with writer Michael Pollan. My name is Neil Harvey. I'll be your host. Welcome to The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature. An award-winning writer, Michael Pollan is contributing editor of the New York Times Magazine. His articles have appeared in numerous publications. He's the author of several award-winning books, including the bestseller, The Omnivore's Dilemma, A Natural History of Four Meals. When Michael Pollan first started writing about organic agriculture, he talked with one of the most important critics of organic agriculture, farmer Joel Salatin. He spoke about his encounter at a recent Bioneers conference.
I called him first to get some salty quotes about Whole Foods and the organic empire, as he calls it. And I was hoping I'd heard about this wonderful pastured chicken and grass-fed beef he was raising, and I hoped he would send me a chicken or a steak. Well, I got the salty quotes I was looking for. He went on about the clash of paradigms and the Western conquistador mentality that was ruining our food system, both organic and industrial. But when I asked him for a chicken, he said, "Sorry, I can't do that." I said, "Well, you're not set up for shipping." "Well, I could have the FedEx man come with the dry ice and the box and the whole thing." And he says, no, you don't get it. I don't believe it's organic or sustainable to FedEx meat across the country. And if you want to try my meat, you've got to come down here to Swope, Virginia, which I promptly did. And thus began my education in one of the most interesting agricultures going on in this country.
On Joel Salatin's farm, Michael Pollan's view of food and where it comes from was transformed.
Something I saw on that farm was a real paradigm shift for me, and I think it holds the kernel of a completely different way of looking at our relationship to nature. Joel, as you know, calls himself a grass farmer. If you ask him, are you a rancher, a chicken farmer, an egg farmer, you know, he'll say, I'm a grass farmer. And when I got to the farm, he insisted, before I met any of his animals, that I get down on the ground and meet his grass. And he explained something very interesting as to what happens. As you know, he grows these six different animals in this very complex rotation. It's kind of an animal rotation based on manures and grubs and all this kind of stuff. But what's happening, if we go really local, because I do want to talk about local food, and we go down to the level of the single grass plant in the pasture being grazed by the ruminant before the chickens come in to fertilize that pasture, here's what's happening. That grass plant, which might be about this long, as soon as it is sheared by that ruminant, does something that all gardeners understand. It strives to restore its root-shoot ratio. It strives to balance the root mass with the leaf mass that it's lost. So it promptly sheds as much root as it has lost at the teeth of that cow. That's a very interesting process. Essentially, it's killing off its roots. And then what happens to those roots? Well, Paul Stamets's friends, the mycelium, go to work, along with the bacteria and the protozoa, and they break down those roots, and that is precisely how soil is made. We build soil from the bottom up, and that is how the prairies were made, in a reciprocal relationship between the bison and the grass and all the wilderness of life that takes place in the earth's stomach, the soil. Joel adds to this kind of pulsing of the pasture the element of bringing in the chickens to add nitrogen to it, and within 6 weeks, the grass is back, and he can run it again. And the key thing to know here is that at the end of the year, he has taken off an immense amount of animal protein from this farm. 40,000 pounds of beef, 30,000 pounds of pork, 10,000 broilers, 1,200 turkeys, 1,000 rabbits, 35,000 dozen eggs from 100 acres. If anyone says, can organic feed the world, take them to this farm. There is no question that sustainable ag can feed the world when it is done right.
By timing his livestock's rotation with the growth cycle of grasses, farmer Joel Salatin's pastures yield 7 times more grass for his cows per acre than the conventional farms nearby. More grass for the cows, more food for the humans. Again, Michael Pollan.
The really important thing to remember is at the end of that year, when all that food has come off this land, there is more soil, not less. There is more biodiversity, not less. There is more fertility, not less. Now, why is that significant? It's significant because most of us carry in our heads a model of our relationship to nature that is zero sum. That is, for us to get what we want from nature, whether it is oil, energy, whether it is food, whether it is entertainment, nature is diminished. We assume this to be true. We see examples of it all around. What that farm, what a well-managed pasture shows is that it is not necessarily the case. There is a non-zero-sum way for us to engage with the natural world. And for me, that is one of the most hopeful things I've observed in 25 years about writing about the human relationship with nature.
Could human beings actually grow an identity as healthy cells in the Earth's body? Could we fit in a new sense of survival of the fittest? Certainly the environmental degradation all around us would indicate otherwise. But in the local food movement, people are finding their places as helpful agents in the larger biological community. They're discovering a new ecological identity. And as Michael Pollan points out, this new ecological identity has powerful new economic and political implications.
I want to put forth the proposition that some of the most important politics going on in this country today are being transacted at farmers' markets. There is a direct line from the kind of healthy soils underneath Joel Salatin's farm and other farms like his to, as Albert Howard reminded us a long time ago, a link from those healthy soils to healthy plants, to healthy animals, to healthy eaters and healthy economies. I think local food is one of the most important political movements going on. It is much bigger than food. It is the most important protest against what Wendell Berry has called the rise of the total economy. The total economy is the globalized world in which everything is a commodity. Everything is produced wherever it can be produced most cheaply, which is to say most destructively of people and resources, and moved to wherever it can be sold most dearly. This is zero-sum food economy. It means more cheap food for us, less for the soil, less for the workers, and much less for the animals. Make no mistake, under this regime, and this is the regime of free trade and food that we're hearing is so important, food is about to go the way of clothing, of consumer electronics. Our food, in the vision of the globalizers, in the vision of the total economy, will come from wherever in the world it can be produced most cheaply, freeing American labor and land for higher uses. I frankly don't know what higher use there is for labor and land than growing food, but in the views of the economists, people like Stephen Blank at UC Davis, Americans farming is like PhDs doing child's play. This is the technocratic vision. Now, make no mistake, organic food is on the same path today. As organic food has gotten industrialized, we find a product such as Stonyfield organic yogurt made from organic milk powder from New Zealand, strawberries from China, apple puree from Turkey, blueberries from Canada. We are finding now we're in the age of organic feedlots, organic factory farms. These were words that were never meant to be attached to one another. Local food economies are our best hope for checking the drift toward the total global economy. And with food is where these economies begin. A revolt is underway across this country, a revolt of small producers and consumers, and some of the most important politics today, as I said, are happening at the farmer's market. Now, we're told all this is very sentimental to go back to a local food economy, even reactionary. And surely there are reasons for buying local that might strike the unsentimental as a little soft-headed. We like the idea of keeping farmers and their wisdom in our communities. We like eating food in season, picked at the peak of its taste and nutritional value, the fact that you find no processed food, no high fructose corn syrup at the farmer's market. We like the idea of keeping land near us in production of food rather than houses and strip malls, defending the landscapes we love. We like what happens socially at the farmer's market, which is quickly emerging as the new public square in this country. I mean, if you compare what happens in the aisles of the grocery store with the farmer's market.
Please touch the screen where indicated.
Please remove your bags and take your credit card to the cashier station to complete your transaction.
Think about what a world of difference that is. At the farmer's market, country meets city.
Yeah, the ribbon stores are good. Those down there are excellent.
Children are introduced to where their food comes from. They learn, often for the first time, that a carrot is not a glossy orange bullet that comes in a plastic bag, but is actually a root. How amazing. People politic, they have petitions, they schmooze. It's just an incredibly vibrant space. And I think we like how the farmers market, or CSA, lets us reconnect through these plants and animals and their farmers to the natural world. We've always looked to food for that connection, and food will always give us that connection. Even the Twinkie has its origins in the natural world. It's only obscured to us. Now, I am fully prepared to defend local food on those so-called sentimental grounds. But I would point out here that all those benefits suggest this is a non-zero-sum economic relationship or social relationship. This is a lot more is going on in that marketplace than the exchange of money for food. But let me move briefly onto another ground. Let me move on to their ground. Let me suggest that it is the globalizers of food who are the real sentimentalists, who are, as Wendell Berry says, acting on a faith without any justification. Very much like the Soviet communists, the last great destroyers of local food economies, they tell us we need to sacrifice things we like here and now, landscapes, relationships, local enterprises, for a promise of future prosperity, that we must break a few eggs to make an omelet. What could be more unrealistic, more soft-headed, than to propose we should destroy things we have now and love in the present for the uncertain prospect of some future benefit? Let me remind you that the Soviet Union founded precisely on the issue of food. Let's stick with the eggs. Let's not make this omelet.
Michael Pollan. He is the author of The Omnivore's Dilemma, A Natural History of Four Meals. When we return, he shows us the fatal flaw of industrial agriculture's foodocracy and a deliciously sensible grassroots alternative. This is Beyond the Barcode, the local food revolution. I'm Neil Harvey. You're listening to The Bioneers, Revolution from the Heart of Nature. Biologists will tell you that any number of animals can manipulate their environment and even use tools. But the modern human seems to be the only animal that can choose to truly disrupt the earth and choose not to. We can force nature to adapt to our technological ambitions, which it will gladly do in the form of global warming or the collapse of agricultural empires, or we can force our technological ambitions to adapt to nature. The biomimic strategy adopted by farmers like Joel Salatin and the communities they feed. According to Michael Pollan, it's an old battle between pragmatists and dreamers with an unexpected twist.
Let me suggest that there's nothing more hard-headed or realistic than building and defending local food economies. Indeed, to do so is a matter not of sentiment, but of critical importance to national security and public health. And let me quickly run through a couple reasons. Energy. The total economy depends on cheap energy, not to mention peace and no threat from terrorism, in order to move these goods from point of cheapest production to point of highest purchase. We will not reduce our dependence on foreign sources of energy or confront the issue of climate change without dealing with this industrial food system. This food system is consuming 17% of our fossil fuel. That's to grow the food with fossil fuel fertilizers, to use diesel on the farm, to use diesel to move the food, to process the food. You know the statistics. We're moving all the food 1,500 miles on average. By the way, supermarket organic food is moved even further today. You can buy local tulips in Seattle at Whole Foods, but in fact, they've been shipped down to a regional warehouse in California and then sent back to Seattle. This is the rationalization of our distribution system. There are people in Denmark eating American sugar cookies, and there are people in America eating Danish sugar cookies. And as the economist Herman Daly had said, it would be much more efficient for them to swap recipes. So, energy. One reason to buy local. Sovereignty is another. Do we really want to go down the path we have gone down with our energy with food? Do we really want to find ourselves in a position where all our grain is coming from South America, our produce from Mexico? The projections right now that are in this state of California, at the end of this century, there will be no more food production in the Central Valley. It will be houses and highways, wall to wall, mountain to mountain. Do we want to go down that path? Do we want to give away our food independence? National security. Our government knows better than we eaters the risks of a highly centralized food system. Tommy Thompson, when he left Department of Homeland Security, in his last press conference, he said something very interesting. He said, "For the life of me, I cannot understand why the terrorists have not attacked our food supply, because it would be so easy to do. When all your hamburgers are being ground in the same factory, when all your salad is being washed in the same sink, it is a very precarious way to eat. This highly centralized food system is very vulnerable to contamination, both deliberate and accidental." And that brings me to the public health justification for local food. We've just had a horrifying illustration of the dangers of centralized food. 200 Americans were seriously sick and 3 were killed by eating bagged spinach. What does that have to do with local food? Well, there are 2 senses in which that product is a result of our industrial system. First, that bug, E. coli 0157H7, is a mutation of industrial feedlot agriculture. That's where that bug begins. You do not have that in grass-fed cattle. Second, that bug was able to be spread far and wide because you're taking spinach from many, many farms and you're washing it literally in a single sink in San Juan Bautista, California, and then you're sending it all over the country. This is not to say you couldn't get sick from eating spinach at your farmer's market, but you know what? If you did, nobody would hear about it because it wouldn't be a national story. It would be contained, the food chain. You would know who was responsible. The response to this, though, to this real threat, is going to be exactly wrong. Instead of seizing on this and the terrorist threat as a reason to decentralize our food supply, which would be, if there was any true concern for homeland security, exactly what the government would be endeavoring to do right now, we are bringing in more regulation and more technology. Progressive senators are proposing that we begin to regulate farms the way we regulate meat plants. And you know what that will mean. That will put small farms out of business. So that you see what happens. As industrial agriculture fails and sickens us, the solutions promote more industrialization of agriculture. And that's what we need to resist. We need to move in the other direction. They want to irradiate the food supply to keep us safe. I say we put our faith not in technology or regulation, but in relationships. Relationships with small farms.
Make friends with a farmer. In the wake of a deadly E. coli outbreak in 2006, investigators traced the culprit to a manure field at an unidentified California ranch. Somehow, the bacteria had spread from the manure to nearby spinach fields. The infected spinach traveled to a giant processor in the area. From there, it spread to 26 states, sickened 200 people, and killed 3 of them. Spinach sales across the U.S. plummeted. But in some places, trust in local food and local faces outweighed the fear of spinach. Again, Michael Pollan.
Now, it's very interesting. At my farmer's market, spinach was doing just fine during this outbreak. People sense these things. They sense that buying food from someone they know, someone they trust, is okay. There may be some risk, but it is a manageable risk. And that is one of the reasons, I think, that farmer's markets, CSAs, this is the fastest growing sector of the food system. The number of farmer's markets has doubled twice in the last decade. The size of this new rising market/revolt is unmeasurable. It's an underground economy. No one's paying taxes. And in a way, I take no position on that. In a way, it's much like the last days of Soviet agriculture, when 50% of the food supply was coming off of small gardens, small underground markets. People simply went around the big system. And people here are beginning to do the same thing. Now, I want to talk about your vote to wrap up. It's true, when the government won't protect our land, our communities, our food supply, our economies, we have to do it ourselves. We have to step out of the foreordained paths and systems. We have to act as consumers/citizens. We need a sense of what it means to be a consumer that is broader than the usual, that perceives being a consumer as a co-creator, a builder of food chains. And we can build a local food economy. We are building a local food economy simply by getting out of the supermarket, by growing our own food, by joining the CSA, and by shopping at the farmers market. All of this is important. We are voting with our forks, and it is a very important vote.
Today, a worldwide food and farming movement has indeed emerged. Over 700 school districts nationally are doing farm-to-school programs and changing school meals to much healthier diets. Many schools are banning junk food vending machines altogether. Hospitals and healthcare institutions are following suit. Even giant food service companies are making the switch. Meanwhile, organic food sales continue to grow at 20% a year. And perhaps more importantly, several farmers groups like Montana Homegrown have begun one-upping USDA organic standards, certifying their produce as locally grown. And that's really just the appetizer. Slow food, fresh food, local food, fair trade food, heirloom food, traceable food, food policy councils, and food justice. The menu is expanding, improving, and becoming more accessible to many, many more people. And with the visionary support from writers like Michael Pollan, we are truly moving beyond the barcode to a genuine local food revolution, one bite at a time. Beyond the Barcode, the local food revolution. Free downloads of this program are available at the radio pages at bioneers.org. Resources related to this show and the entire Bioneers radio series can be found at bioneers.org or by calling 877-246-6337. That's 1-877-BIONEER. Visit bioneers.org to become a member, make a donation, learn about the annual Bioneers conference, or join our thriving online community. Choose from articles, blogs, event calendars, books, podcasts, CDs, and DVDs at bioneers.org or call 1-877-BIONEER. The Bioneers Revolution from the Heart of Nature is a production of Collective Heritage Institute. Executive producer, Kenny Ossibel. Written by Kenny Ossibel and Laird Townsend. Senior producer, Neil Harvey. Managing producer, Stephanie Welch. Production assistants, Marita Prandoni. Farmers Market sound effects were recorded by Tom Voorhees. Our theme music is taken from the album Journey Between by Baka Beyond and used by permission of Hannibal Records, a Rykodisc label. Additional music was made available by Pygmy Twilight Records at donjulin.com. For more music information, please visit bioneers.org. The opinions expressed in the Bioneers Revolution from the Heart of Nature radio series are those of the presenters and are not necessarily those of Collective Heritage Institute, the underwriters, or this radio station. My name is Neil Harvey. Thank you for listening. I invite you to join the Bioneers in improving the environment by changing the world. This is program number 0708.
This program is underwritten in part by Organic Valley Family of Farms, celebrating 20 years organic and farmer-owned since 1988. Meet your local farmers at organicvalley.coop.